Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. And I am excited for the announcement that you've been teasing for weeks now.
Yes.
What is that?
It's finally time to tell everyone my news. And that news is that I'm starting a YouTube channel.
Woo!
Thank you. I feel like I'm
excited.
Insert some applause or something. I'm not going to do that. But
we could.
But I could, and it would potentially be fitting. But yes, I am starting a YouTube channel, and my first video is out now. So you should probably go watch it. If you want to, I'm going to be talking about, or I am talking about, Dolly Osterreich and how she kept her lover in the attic for 10 years. She had an affair with a man who she kept in her attic for 10 years.
Yeah, it's truly insane.
And that man killed her husband. I have a description from my YouTube video. I can just read that to you really quickly, just so I have a couple succinct words. Dolly Osterreich was an American housewife married to a wealthy textile manufacturer, Fred Osterreich. However, Dolly had a secret. She kept her lover, Otto Sandhuber, in her attic for over a decade, taking him with her to the many homes they moved to over the years. Eventually, Otto would descend from the attic and shoot Fred in the chest 3 times, ending his life instantly, and Dolly and Otto had to figure out what to do before the police arrived. And that is only a portion of the story. There is so much more to this story, and it is a wild one. So that is the first story that I'm going to be talking about over on my YouTube channel. Oh, and by the way, it's called Steph Today. I realize I didn't actually tell you what it was called until just now. It's called Steph Today.
There you go. Yeah, it's a banger of a story, and I've been so excited for you to do this, and you've persevered through a lot of BS, so I'm proud of you.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, no, it's been a lot of back-end annoyance, but yeah, it's here and I'm happy that it's happening and I've been wanting to do this for a long time. So yeah, my YouTube channel is going to be a little bit different than the podcast because it's not today. So on this show, we obviously focus on specifically survivor stories, but on Steph Today, I want to focus on other kinds of stories. I don't necessarily have one topic or thing in mind, but it's just going to be stories that I find interesting or unbelievable or shocking or funny or really anything. I'm going to get into true crime videos. I'm going to get into potentially some Reddit stories, and I don't really know what else, but I hope you come along with me for the journey and you go over there and you subscribe and you smash that like button because that's what people do over there.
Yeah, nope. Now we're going to be the smash the like button people.
Well, you know,
you got to be.
But yeah, go check out Steph Today over on YouTube. And hopefully you'll enjoy my first video and you'll get to see what I look like because most of you don't know what I look like. Whenever I post any sort of Instagram picture or anything on our Not Today Instagram, so many people comment, I had no idea what you looked like. And even with this video, there have been so many comments that are like, I had no idea what you looked like. So if you're curious about that, you can also see what I look like. So
there you go.
If nothing else, you can see my face.
That's true. Yeah, I always find it funny when you don't know what somebody looks like and what you imagine versus what they actually look like. So
yeah,
comment below if they matched up, you know?
Like, subscribe, drop a comment. But anyway.
Share it.
Yeah, or whatever.
I don't know.
Do anything.
We don't care. You will like it, though. It's a great story. And nope. You did it really well.
Thank you for saying that. Anyway, let's move on to Patreon because we also have that. Bonus episode number 50 is coming out next week. We're going to be talking about the story of Hannah Petty. 22-year-old Hannah Petty, a married mother of two from Alabama, suffered debilitating pain and lost more than 45 pounds as her health rapidly declined. As doctors worked to figure out what was causing the months of Hannah's pain, they concluded someone had been poisoning her, and whoever it was, they were probably pretty close to her. So that is the case that we will be covering over on Patreon, and that episode will be coming out next week. There is 49 other bonus episodes as well over there, and if you become a patron, you can vote on upcoming future bonus episodes as well. You know the spiel. But anyway, today we're going to talk about an avalanche.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like an avalanche to me feels similar to a tsunami, because I will have every now and again kind of a nightmare about one of them.
Sure.
Like, it's just the complete lack of control.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is kind of a snow tsunami.
Right. So I don't know. The people who live in the mountains where they just, you know, like, oh, we're blowing up the mountain today, so there's no, you know, avalanche and all the snow comes down.
Right.
Truly nuts to me.
Yeah.
But
they're spooky.
Yeah. It's the other thing is, what are you going to do? You just get swallowed by snow.
Run.
So, run.
You're going to run.
Ski or run. I don't know. Try and get by a tree.
Uh-huh. Well, our survivor today really had to figure that one out. And yeah, I don't know what else to say at the top. So why don't we just jump right in, because we have a lot to talk about his journey. And oh boy, does he go through a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
In 2003, 26-year-old Ken Jones was a student at the University of Manchester studying politics. And before starting his degree, he spent 4 years as a British paratrooper and 2 years as an English Special Forces soldier. Try saying that a couple times. That was a tongue twister.
That, and also he is not faint of heart.
No, he is very intense and prepared. He is one trained man. On January 5th of 2003, Ken was on his way to a vacation trip that he had planned for himself. But this wasn't going to be the type of vacation where you relax and unwind. Ken was looking for adventure and a physical challenge. He decided he would take a solo trip into the Transylvanian Alps, a remote region of central Romania, the Carpathian Mountains. The Carpathian Mountains are a range of mountains forming an arc across Central Europe and Southeastern Europe. Roughly 930 miles long, it is the third longest European mountain range. The range stretches from the Western Carpathians in Austria, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Poland, clockwise through the Eastern Carpathians in Ukraine and Romania, to the Southeastern Carpathians in Romania and Serbia. The Carpathians provide habitat for the largest European populations of brown bears, wolves, lynxes, and chamois, which, forgive me, I certainly don't know how to pronounce that correctly, but it is basically like a cross between a goat and an antelope.
Sweet.
Yeah. With the highest concentration in Romania, as well as over one-third of all European plant species. The mountains and their foothills also have many thermal and mineral waters, with Romania having one-third of the European total, if you want a little fun fact today. Ken would be taking a solo trip to climb the Moldovino Peak in Transylvania, and at 8,300 feet, it's Romania's highest peak. He tends to spend a lot of time on his own traveling around, so this wasn't out of the ordinary for him. He said he gets restless and gets the urge to go off and do things, saying, quote, "I'm a fanatical lover of freedom, and sometimes you've just got to go out on your own and just enjoy a different kind of peace." Ken's military background gave him a taste for extreme adventure, and whenever he had any time off, he loved to travel and escape to the great outdoors. And this time, he chose to challenge himself in one of Europe's wildest landscapes. Romania ticked a lot of boxes for Ken. He wanted to remove himself from the tourist traps, and he was looking for a challenge. He wanted to make his life tougher. He said, quote, "Between my military experience and mountaineering training, I was accustomed to being uncomfortable." So this really was not a vacation for any sort of chill.
No, and it makes sense why he is this way, but it is kind of hilarious that on your vacation or any free time you have, you want to be uncomfortable.
Yes, like super uncomfortable and very challenged, like pushed to his limit.
Yeah.
He was also going in the dead of winter, so it was a difficult journey just to get to the mountain. Ken described it as a quote-unquote crazy dangerous journey. He took a taxi up the mountain, which was covered in snow, and the driver was absolutely whipping around the windy, snow-covered mountain roads, all while he was munching on sunflower seeds. Even before Ken's real adventure had begun, he was sitting in the passenger seat of this car thinking to himself, "What the hell am I doing? This is probably just as dangerous as the mountain itself." He held on for dear life and fastened his seatbelt as he looked out the window. And he couldn't help but feel the sense of foreboding, but he dismissed it. He had had moments like that before and nothing had happened. And he was already basically there, so he wasn't going to turn around now for a little bad feeling. He chalked it up to just a little anxiety.
I mean, have you had one of those? Like, I've definitely had that moment.
Absolutely.
Had nothing happen.
Yeah, totally.
So I get it.
But it's one of those like gut feelings.
Yeah.
And
but also he's on a mountain.
Right. Yeah. It would have been a lot harder for him to follow that gut feeling and actually leave. But at the same time, he technically could have.
He's not going to leave.
I mean, he wasn't going to.
Everything that we've described about him leads me to believe that there's no way in hell he's leaving now.
Exactly.
Over a gut feeling.
No, exactly. There was no chance he was turning back now. He's in Romania. Like,
yeah.
In the summertime, this mountain would be full of hikers, but in the middle of January, the mountain was covered in deep snow and was freezing, so that didn't make it very hospitable. Most people were not brave enough to venture onto the mountain in those conditions, let alone on a solo trip. So once Ken did make it to the mountain and got out of his crazy taxi, he became very aware that he really seemed to have the whole mountain to himself. Which was a nice feeling, but also pretty scary. He became very aware of how small he was out there. But Ken was prepared. He had lots of training, and he had packed for a wide range of possibilities. However, one thing he didn't bring with him was a satellite phone. Nor did he tell anyone where he was going, or what he was doing.
Yep, this is the two ingredients for getting on this show.
Right.
Really, it's like at the beginning of every story when you're like, they went somewhere and didn't tell anyone where they were going. Probably biggest mistake. And then also no phone. Tough.
Well, even when you tell someone where you're going, you can still land yourself on this show, you know?
Yeah. But
think back to a couple episodes ago. David Chicatello's family knew exactly where he was, and he was still stranded in a slot canyon for 6 days. So
it's true. Here's the other thing is, also, for us to be talking about it, you have to live. So,
right.
You know.
There's also that.
There's that.
And here's what he said. So, he didn't want to take a satellite phone with him because he didn't want to call for help. His mindset was strong, fierce independence. The mountain provided adventure, opportunity, physical challenge, a spiritual and physical escape that he was really yearning for, and that came with risks. But that was a risk that he was willing to take for his own sanity, peace of mind, and just to live. So he was...
This is insane.
That's what he said. That's what he wanted.
Well, I mean, he clearly feels that in his bones.
He did.
So this is the right move for him. From our perspective, I imagine it's hard to grasp.
Yeah, he was coming at it from a standpoint of fierce independence and, I mean, brave. Maybe a little, I don't know, I don't want to call it irresponsible because he clearly is trained enough to get him out of this situation, but...
Yeah, it's just like to choose, like, I don't want to call for help. Yeah, it's just so crazy that that was his choice because...
Yeah.
There's always something that's out of your control.
Right.
That could happen.
My thought would be I would want to have it just for the peace of mind in case something did happen and then choose not to use it up until the very last moment.
Right.
You know?
Well, but, I mean, the decision that's kind of like underneath all this is that you've chosen to die rather than get help if you really had a situation you couldn't get yourself out of.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is just the choice he made. He was fiercely independent and believed that he could handle it. And he obviously could. So
right.
Let's just keep going because, I mean, he wasn't wrong. But
right.
Yeah, it's just it's an insane story.
Yeah,
so,
he did make it.
He really did. He really, really did. So normally this would be a 2-day climb to the top of the mountain, but Ken had a really competitive spirit, and he grew up with brothers, and they were always extremely competitive with each other, so he had challenged himself to complete the climb in only a single day. Most people wouldn't have been able to do that, but since Ken was in such good shape, he thought he might be able to do it. Everything was a race to him and his brothers. They would race to the bus stop in the morning before school, so he wanted to be as fast as he could. And when I looked up this peak and climb, I saw on one website that it apparently takes approximately 8 hours to ascend to the top and 7 hours to come back down. But Ken was extremely determined to get to the top in one day. So he was literally running up the mountain. That's what he was doing.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, to like think about this. Try and run for 8 hours. If you run like a slow marathon, I think it takes around 2.5, 3 hours. So this is like 3 or 4 marathons worth of running.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure
up
it would
a mountain.
Right. I'm sure it would shave down some of the hour time if he truly was running up the mountain. But yeah, that he was running for a good portion of it, which is so intense.
Right.
But he enjoyed the feeling of his body working hard and functioning well and finding a good rhythm. So this is like the kind of guy that Ken is. He's like really dialed in and super intense in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just commenting on how elite he is.
Yes.
That he can do this.
Absolutely.
Because to have your heart rate at that level for 6 hours, probably, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5, it's truly insane.
Yeah, it really is impressive. And he was making amazing time on the lower slopes of the mountain. As he made his way up, he came to his first bit of hazardous terrain that he took a bit of pause for. There was a clearing in the trees that opened up to a wide open space between the next set of trees. It was a man-made fire break, which prevented the spread of fire in the summertime. However, during the winter, this area was quite dangerous because it became a hotspot for avalanches. Ken had done an Arctic warfare course in the Army, so he knew all about the possibility of avalanches, and he was well-versed in the drills and how to deal with them. There was another way he could have gone up, but since this was the fastest way to the top, he decided to ignore the risk and fast-track it. The higher he got, the snow became more of a fine powder, and at certain points in the climb, he would sink down into the snow up to his waist, which definitely slowed down his climb. So now he was sinking in using his whole body to fight his way through the deep snow. It had become really hard work, which was what he was looking for going into this journey, but it was slowing down his goal of getting to the top in one day. At one point, there was a really steep bit of climb that was almost like he was climbing a wall, where he had to rely really heavily on his crampons and ice axe. Crampons are traction devices with metal spikes attached to footwear for securely traversing snow, ice, and glaciers during mountaineering, ice climbing, and glacier travel, just for anyone who is unaware of what that is. Because I certainly didn't know the first time I heard that word, but that's what it is. He said, quote, "That was pretty tricky. At one point, I got halfway up and I just slipped." After he slipped, he tumbled quite far back down the area he had just climbed up before landing on his back in the snow. So the terrain was quite treacherous, but Ken was determined to keep going. So he stood back up, dusted the caked snow off of his hat, and decided he would retrace his steps back up the extremely steep slope. And sure enough, he managed to make it over that really steep section and to a really amazing lookout point. He took a moment to look out and had the realization that this was as remote as he'd ever been. He felt totally exposed and alone, but exhilarated. He had the whole mountain range to himself. Since he had that minor setback, he only had a few hours of daylight left to make it to the top. He knew with the amount of snow he had already battled to get that far up, it would be pretty tough, but he was gonna still try. He felt if anyone could do it, it would be him. He was really fit and strong, and he had trained hard, and he still felt good about it. As he went, he kept hoping the snow level would change, but it never seemed to. And as the sun began to set, he had to decide if he was going to make the last push to the top or if he was going to retreat to shelter and make a second attempt in the morning. He really didn't want to give up and just kept walking, still hoping the snow would suddenly be kinder to him. But there had come a point where he had to say enough was enough. Summiting was important to him, but his safety was more important, and he didn't want to do anything silly. So reluctantly, Ken turned around to get himself back to the safety of the trees for the night. His plan was to dig himself a snow hole or set up his poncho. He didn't want to be on the open slope all night. The trees would offer him some natural shelter. That was important because at night, the mountain would become even more dangerous. The descent was a lot quicker for Ken, thankfully, but he needed to find level ground to camp on. And once again, the fire break offered the most direct route back to the trees. All of a sudden, as Ken was crossing the opening, there was a noise from the top of the mountain. At first, Ken thought it was possibly an animal or something. It was such a strange sound, something he had never heard before, like a groan. But then he realized what it was. He turned around to see a wall of snow barreling down the mountain straight toward him. At first, Ken was transfixed. He had never seen an avalanche in person, and in a strange way, he just wanted to look at it. He should have turned and run, but it was just something so big and magnificent that he had never seen. And then he snapped out of it, and each second that went by brought him closer to death. He turned his back to it and ran as fast as he possibly could into the trees. And the entire time he ran, he felt like the thing was chasing him. His heart was beating out of his chest. He knew it would hit him and kill him, but he continued to run as hard as he could. Until finally, he dove into the trees, and just in time, because the avalanche funneled down the firebreak, thankfully stopping at the trees. The thunderous crush of snow had swept past him and began to fade into the forest below. If he hadn't made it into the tree line, it definitely would have killed him. Ken sat there in the snow and was shaken for quite some time. He couldn't believe he was alive, but as soon as he calmed himself down, he started to laugh. He very narrowly escaped with his life.
Well, he got the exhilaration he was looking for, I'm sure.
I guess there's that, yeah. Yeah, he's like, I just couldn't help but giggle. Like, yeah, what do you do?
Yeah, it's such a relief.
But he wasn't out of the woods yet. He quite literally was in the woods.
He's still very much.
Yes. The snow on the upper slopes was very unstable, and the likelihood of another avalanche was very high. After that first avalanche, Ken felt very vulnerable on that slope. He knew he needed to find somewhere safe to sleep, and he wanted to drop down deep into the forest and get some good sleep, that way he could still possibly make the ascent the next day. He had to race to get to lower ground before it became too dark, but now he was traveling through the trees, and the snow was deep. And in snow that deep, it was proving to be very difficult. The terrain became very unforgiving, and really fast, tree branches began poking Ken in the eye as he walked. He had to push them out of his way as he went, and it was becoming a nightmare. And then the slope of the mountain and the rough terrain forced him back onto open ground. He knew the quickest way down was the fire break through the trees. He didn't want to go anywhere near it again, but he felt like he didn't have a choice. He had to go down it. It was a shortcut, but a serious risk, but one he felt he had to take, which he very quickly realized was a very bad call. Because right as he made it to the center of the firebreak, he heard the now very familiar sound of an avalanche coming right for him. And this time, it was on him much quicker than the first one. And this time, he turned and ran immediately. He ran as fast and as frantically as he possibly could, but his luck had run out. Because the next thing he knew, the avalanche had pulled him off of his feet and he was immediately swallowed by the snow. He said, quote, "You can feel all your bones and organs inside. Everything's rattling."
That's so visceral.
It is. Also, I wanted to take a quick moment to say from this moment on, there are a few moments that become quite visceral and...
gory.
Gory is not necessarily the word I would use to describe it, but yeah, maybe gory. Just a tough descriptions.
I think you guys get the idea,
you
right?
You get the idea. There's some descriptors that some people might find icky. Anyway, we'll keep going. And then all of a sudden, Ken was free-falling. He had enough time during that fall to think to himself, this is really bad. That's how long he was falling before he made contact with the rock below him.
Ooh.
He landed on his butt and he heard a massive crack.
Ooh.
His pelvis shattered and his femur snapped upon impact. Ken said he must have lost consciousness because he lay there not knowing what had happened or where he was. It was dark and he really couldn't feel anything at first. He said, quote, "Stars were flying around my head and strange bursts of blue electric light were running into my eyes. I couldn't feel if my tongue and my teeth were in my mouth, and I had to sit there for a while not knowing what to do, just trying to take in everything that's happened." He removed his glove and wiped the snow and dirt from his face and head, and he very quickly could tell that he had a head wound that was bleeding quite a bit, but he was about to learn that he had suffered a far more devastating injury. Not only had he shattered his pelvis and broken his femur, but the bone fragments had severed blood vessels around the pelvis, causing internal bleeding and making his core body temperature plummet, which could absolutely kill him in this environment. And that was when the pain hit him. He was in absolute agony. He said it was like a red-hot poker was being pushed through his leg. Ken knew his injuries were bad, but he didn't know the full extent of it. He sat up to assess his situation as best he could. And as he put his hand to the side of his leg, his left hand felt wet and sticky. He had a big open wound on the side of his left hip that was bleeding heavily. He needed to figure out how to stop that quickly because if he lost any more, that could kill him. So he decided his best bet was to roll onto his side. He pulled a first field dressing from his pocket, and that seemed to stem the flow of blood. And after he dressed it, he pulled his pants back up and decided to not look at it again. His natural instinct was to get up and try walking. His leg was in pain, but he wasn't sure if it was broken. But as soon as he even attempted to put any sort of weight on his leg, he felt a jolt of agonizing pain shoot up his body. It became immediately apparent that there was no way in hell he'd be able to walk. Using that leg was out of the question. He was in a very desperate situation. And even worse, he was 8 miles from the nearest village, and he had no cell phone or satellite phone. Thanks to his military training, he had packed for harsh conditions, but the avalanche had torn off his backpack and buried it somewhere further up the mountain. So all of his provisions were now gone. His sleeping bag, most of his food, his stove, everything he had brought with him to survive was in that bag. Also, nobody in his life knew where he was. So if he was going to get out of this thing alive, it would be because he got himself out. He had a pretty big decision to make. Attempt to go up the mountain and try to find his pack with all of his life-saving supplies, but of course there was no guarantee that he would find it, or that he'd be able to make it back down even if he did find it, or potentially conserve time and energy by descending without them, but risk dying without them. It was a really tough call for him to make, because it was an actual life or death decision. But then, as Ken looked up the mountain, he spotted his flashlight, which had somehow turned on in the avalanche and had fallen out of his backpack.
What?
Yeah, it had turned on and fell face up in the snow.
It's like a sign from God.
Or something. I don't even know. It wasn't that far up the mountain, so if he could get to it, he felt like that was his best means of survival at that point, and at this point was his only tool, if he could get to it. It might give him some kind of chance of survival, even if it was a small one, so he had to get to it. Maybe he'd be able to use that to spot his other things, and if he was lucky, maybe his backpack would be near it. It was a fairly small distance, but every movement he made was extremely painful. Ken rolled himself onto his stomach and propped himself on his side that wasn't shattered and pulled himself inch by inch up the deep snow. And as he made his way up the slope, he managed to find his hat and a waterproof sack before eventually he made it to his flashlight. Hope of recovering his backpack and sleeping bag were very slim. His path was blocked by a vertical cliff, the same one that he fell down in the avalanche, which caused him to shatter his pelvis in the first place. Under normal conditions, he said he would have been able to climb it effortlessly. However, on his stomach, with a shattered pelvis and femur, there was no chance. Ken continued trying to climb further up little by little, hoping he would find something else, but it became too steep very quickly. He had grabbed onto a branch to pull himself up, but he slipped and fell backwards and rolled back, tumbling backwards down the slope. It was an excruciating reminder of the predicament he was in. His leg had folded up underneath him, and it was quote-unquote wrenched at the joint, And I don't even fully know what he meant by that, but it does not sound pleasant. It sounds like it involved a lot of pulling.
Yeah, I can't even really fully try and think about where he's at.
Wrenched at the joint, what that means?
Yeah.
Don't even know. His leg folded up underneath him?
Ooh.
Come on. He had been through a lot and trained very hard in his life, but nothing could have prepared him for this amount of pain. Every time he moved, he could feel bone grating and sliding inside his body. He was retching in agony. So Ken decided that there was no possible way he'd be able to go further up to continue looking for any items, and he would have to make the descent down the mountain. There was nothing else he could do. He would have to attempt to pull himself out of there without his supplies. He figured out that it was a lot easier for him to sit on his butt and kind of scooch his way down the mountain rather than be on his stomach and pull himself. So he was able to move a little bit easier and with slightly less pain, whatever that means in this situation.
Yeah, like 9.9 instead of 10.
Right. Instead of being on his stomach, because, you know, he's on a downward slope. So he's able to just kind of scoot his way down the mountain at this point. So on his way down, he found a few other scattered supplies, like a spare pair of socks and his small water bottle, but not his backpack. And for over an hour, he descended the mountain like that until he found flatter ground to rest for a bit. And that was really only the beginning for Ken. The foot on his broken leg was painfully swollen. He needed to ease the pressure immediately or gangrene would take his foot. He said, quote, "I looked down at my foot, which was throbbing. It was comically large, and I was sure without circulation, gangrene would set in." He had attempted to kick off his boot, but as he did, he could feel the bones grating and moving around in his leg. But he had to inflict this pain on himself. If he didn't get this boot off, he was going to lose his foot. And at the same time, if he got his boot off and left it off, he could get frostbite, which would also probably mean losing his foot. So it was a very delicate balance. He said the injury to his leg basically froze any movement in his hip, so he couldn't move his leg to get his shoe off, and numb hands prevented him from undoing his laces, which was when he remembered he actually might still have something in his pocket that could help him. So he fished in his pockets and pulled out his Leatherman Wave, which is a multi-tool. It's 18 tools in one. So he actually had like a Swiss Army knife type 18 tools in one kind of thing. It includes sharp blades, spring scissors, wire cutters, pliers, and it opens easily with one hand, even if you're wearing gloves. Like, it's made for this kind of terrain and, you know, whatever. So he used the pliers to pull his laces free, but his foot had swollen so large, the boots remained stuck. So he had to flip out the blade and slit the heel off of his boot, and he managed to yank it off against a tree root. And once he got it off, he had a moment of bliss having his feet free. All the blood that had been stuck in his foot could make its way back up his leg. But the relief was very short-lived because then the cold set in. Temperatures on the mountain at night could get down to negative 15. The cold was also extremely painful. He said it was so cold it felt like he was constantly getting stabbed. His only protection at that point was a mountain jacket and a waterproof sack, which he was using to shield his feet from the wind. He also desperately needed food. And thankfully, he did have his last bit of crushed sausage rolls in his pocket from earlier that day. His nearly frozen hands were also pretty incapable of undoing the buttons on his pockets. So again, he tore off the buttons using the Leatherman to get to the sausage rolls. He probably should have been careful about how much of the sausage roll he ate, but he was so hungry at that point that he scarfed down the whole thing before he could really even think about rationing it. He then managed to get his foot back into the boot with the pliers, but he still had a long night ahead of him. As he lay there, his mind raced. He couldn't help but think about all the terrible scenarios that could play out because he was alone on that mountain in such a vulnerable position. He also didn't have his sleeping bag, so if he fell asleep, there was a very high likelihood that his body would stop shivering and he would develop advanced hypothermia and he would die.
Yeah, this is bleak. I mean, it's crazy that you need to stay awake so that you don't stop shivering.
Yeah.
Like, it's really what's keeping you alive.
Yeah. Yeah, he was shivering so intensely, but he knew that if he fell asleep, it would stop and then he'd die. So he had to keep himself awake all night long. and the night had kind of just started. He had no idea how he was supposed to keep himself awake and alive through all of this. Sleep would have been the easiest way to go at this point. He could have fallen asleep in a second if he wanted to. All he would have had to do was shut his eyes and he wouldn't have been in pain anymore. But he didn't want to die. It was a long and torturous night. His spirits hit an all-time low. And he knew that as the night dragged on, it would only get colder. He thought about anything he could to keep himself awake, being warm in bed, playing football, his brother, anything he could to distract himself from being in pain and in the snow on the side of a remote mountain in Romania. And finally, daylight came, and Ken was overwhelmed with relief. He felt like he could finally do something, so he screamed for help, which he had to try, but was likely for nothing, because the chances of someone being on that mountain in the early hours of a cold January morning were close to zero. He knew nobody knew where he was or what he was doing, but he couldn't help but daydream about emergency services getting called for him, and a helicopter flying up the side of the mountain for him, or search and rescue guys walking through the forest for him. But in reality, Ken was on his own. He really only had himself to rely on. He was in big trouble. He had to hope that his training would be able to get himself to the nearest village. His army instructors always said, "Don't stand still. Move and innovate or die." Ken said, quote, "You've got to constantly be assessing your situations. As soon as you stop that thought process, it's all over. You can't think your way out of trouble. You've got to do something." Ken set out once again down the mountain, and this time with no food and no water. In the sitting position, he made his way inch by inch down the mountain for hours. He wasn't able to cover much ground, but the effort he was exerting was very large, so he became thirsty quickly. He began eating snow, trying to quench his thirst, but that wasn't a great solution, because although it was water, it was frozen water. So really, all it was doing was lowering his body's core temperature faster, causing him to become dehydrated faster, which is so annoying. It's kind of similar to being stranded in the ocean. You're surrounded by water, but if you drink it, it will kill you faster. It gave him temporary moisture, but it really wasn't much.
Can he put it in his water bottle to have it melt?
That wasn't really what he was doing. He was just kind of shoveling like a handful in his mouth.
Okay, I didn't know that you would get more dehydrated if you ate snow.
Yeah, because your body has to work harder to warm up after you eat it. So you dehydrate.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. There was a river in the valley below him, which he would be able to get water from. So he had seen that. And he was basically moving in the direction of the road that the taxi had dropped him off at. So that was where he was attempting to get to, and he had seen a stream off in the distance, so that's kind of where he was trying to get to. He figured that was the most likely place that he would be rescued. And after hours of agonizing descent, he finally made it off the steep slopes of the mountain and onto the valley floor, which was an amazing feat, but brought on a new challenge. Now that he was on flatter ground, he didn't get any more assistance from gravity. He couldn't sit and slide. So he had to lay down on his stomach and prop himself up on his side that wasn't shattered and pull himself along, which was all physical exertion. So to get himself through it, he had to set small goals for himself, because if he looked at the whole journey he still had ahead of him, it would have been way too overwhelming. He would play games with himself of trying to beat the clock. So he would set targets within eyesight and give himself a time frame to get there and just focus on that. He said it was like he had like Rocky montages of just like getting to like one tree, pulling himself inch by inch. That was how he had to do it. But it was just that constantly over and over.
Yeah, I mean, it's super smart to do. I'm just like, I can't. I mean, it's just hard to truly understand how much pain he's in.
I could not possibly imagine shattering your pelvis and then having to pull yourself off of a mountain. Like,
yeah, well, I don't really want to.
Oh my God.
I mean, if anyone's built for this, it is this man.
Yeah.
You know?
And each target he got to was a massive win. But even with those mind games, he was still in agonizing pain and knew he still had 7 miles from the nearest village. And at that point, his desire to keep moving was really only to reach water. He was so thirsty. He had become so dehydrated and was pushing his body so hard, he needed a real drink instead of just eating snow. And finally, after a very long crawl over the valley floor, he made it to the river. And when he got to the water, he found that the bank was actually really high and the water level was kind of low. So it was really hard for him to reach the water, which was tough. He came up with the idea of tying his shoelaces to the neck of the bottle and filling it up that way. So once again, he pulled the laces from his boot with the pliers and then blew warm air into his hands enough to be able to tie a loop around the nose of the small plastic bottle, and then he threw that into the stream. When he finally got actual water in his mouth, it was immediate relief. He said he felt like a car on empty that was finally getting gassed up. His body was getting revived, and suddenly he was full of energy again. And with that, Ken continued to pull himself along the river, hoping he would find the road that would lead him to help. But after a while of pulling himself along the bank, he soon realized that there was no way to access the road from that side of the stream, which meant he had no choice but to cross it if he wanted to get to the road. He sat on the bank for a while, looking at the stream, knowing how cold it must be, not wanting to accept the fact that he was going to have to get into it. It was the middle of January, and it was running down a mountain. This water was as cold as it could get without completely freezing over. The human body loses heat 25 times faster in cold water, so one slip and he would easily freeze to death. So Ken sat there, getting more and more terrified, thinking about the possibilities. And then finally, he worked up the courage, telling himself, just get in the stream and cross it. It's as simple as that. So he grabbed onto a branch to use as a crutch and somehow managed to stand up. He was about shin deep in the water and was shivering uncontrollably and could feel the water rising up his legs as he continued to hobble across. As he was about halfway across the water, he was about thigh deep when he decided to take his jacket off and throw it to the other side of the stream, along with his gloves, just in case, because he knew they could not get wet. And also, it was motivation, because he thought to himself, now you have to go and get them, or you'll be dead.
Well, there is no better motivator.
Yeah. And somehow, Ken managed to walk across the stream, getting only about thigh deep in the water before he made it to the other side. But it took him an hour to cross.
He was in the water for an hour?
He was, and it was very small. Like, it was not a very big stream, but he was moving so slowly that it took him an hour.
I mean, you're numb mm-hmm. at that point.
Yeah. When he made it to the other side, he sat on the bank for a few seconds, shocked, trying to get his breath back. He put his jacket back on and thought to himself, it couldn't get worse than this. And then he continued forward, because he had no other choice. He rolled over and pulled himself forward. But even after all of that, he had barely covered a mile. By that point, the sun was going down once again, and Ken was facing another night out there. He had even more dangers he was thinking about. Transylvania is full of bears and wolves, and he had begun to panic because he felt very exposed, and it was getting dark, and he really wanted to get to the cover of the trees where he felt he would be more concealed from predators. He was way too vulnerable. But even if he got to the cover of the trees, he was covered in his own blood, and they could very easily smell him if there were any around. So he tried to crawl as fast as he could until finally he made it to the tree cover, but even with that, he wasn't safe. He was still very easy prey. That was just one of the things he was thinking about. He was also thinking about how hungry he was, how much pain he was in, how dehydrated he was once again, and how cold it was. He also couldn't tell if he was hallucinating, but he began hearing packs of wolves howling all around him, and he was pretty sure he was seeing eyes in the trees around him. So he was panicking all night long. He thought about what it would feel like to be eaten alive, and that was what he had to think about all night long until the sun came up once again.
The vibes are bad.
Vibes were bad.
Yeah.
Vibes were really bad. But then day three came.
Well, I just think back to him crossing the river and being like, oh, it can't get worse.
Couldn't
than this.
Possibly get worse.
I'm like, oh yeah, it can.
Yeah, cut two.
Here we are. And it still could get worse.
Mm-hmm, unfortunately. So now we're in day three, and Ken felt a massive relief once the sun came up once again. He started crawling as soon as he could, but that day it had begun snowing.
Why didn't the wolves eat him? Like, seriously.
I think he might have been just seeing things. I don't think there actually were wolves around him. It was probably his mind playing tricks on him. Because if there were a pack of wolves around him, he would have been eaten.
right? I mean, he's injured, bleeding. Like,
yeah, he would have been
like the prime target.
He would have been the easiest prey.
Right.
So I don't think that there actually were, but who knows? Maybe he had like a rock in his hand all night. So maybe he like had, you know, been like, hey, bear, or something all night. I don't know.
Hey, bear.
I don't know. But he made it through the night. But, you know, now we get into day three and we forget that weather can be a bad thing, too, because he had been kind of lucky with the weather the first couple days. And now it's day three and it's snowing. So, uh-oh. It was like the sky had closed above him and the snow was coming down hard, and he felt more alone than he had ever been before. He knew a storm was coming, and within a few minutes, snow started coming down really hard. It seemed like the mountain was conspiring against him and wanted him dead. It felt cruel. It was taking every last ounce of what he had in him, but he had to keep moving, because if he fell asleep or stopped, he would die. And it got to the point where he wasn't even really sure why he was moving anymore. He had begun wishing that his body would just give out and he would die. But at the same time, he wouldn't stop and give up himself, because that felt like he'd be committing suicide and he didn't want to do that. So he was just bullying himself forward, but also wishing it would just end. He had also thought about his family so many times, who he was really close to. He didn't want someone to come to his house and tell them that he had died. And he thought about dying alone, which he really didn't want to do. He wanted to keep moving, but his body decided it was going to stop. He hadn't slept in 48 hours. So on day four, Ken miraculously woke up underneath a small pile of snow. He thought to himself, well, you're not dying. You're still here. The heavy snowfall had basically cocooned him and insulated him and basically kept him alive and warm.
So he just passed out
in the storm? He passed out. Yep, he passed out in the storm, and the snowfall had cocooned him just enough and kept him warm enough that he survived falling asleep in the snow.
This is truly insane. I can't believe he isn't dead after being in the water for an hour, let alone this, like you just fall asleep.
Yep. When he woke up on day four, he knew there was no way he would survive another night out there, so he had to give it everything he had. This was going to be his final day. It was either going to end in him saving himself, or he was dying out there. So he set off crawling once again. Despite the pain, he kept moving. He knew the road must be close, and he told himself once he got there, he'd be safe. Although there was bad news. He came up on another river, blocking his path once again. And he was really angry. There was no way around it. He knew he would have to get back in the stream, and this time it was going to be hell, because this one was bigger. He remembered when he was little, on the edge of a diving board, he'd be so scared to jump. And here he was, on the edge of this river, putting himself through the same suffering. So he thought, just get in the stream. The far side was too steep for Ken to pull himself out, so supporting himself by leaning on the bank, he had to walk in the river until he could find a place that he could get out of it. The shock of submerging took his breath away, but he had to stay focused. He used a stick as a crutch to support himself as best he could and took very tiny hops and pivots on his good leg and let the current kind of carry his broken limb. He had to hobble like that along the edge of the river until he found a suitable place to cross, because where he got in was too high for him to climb out. And after an hour of wading along the edge, he finally found a spot that he was able to cross. But the water was too deep for him to just wade across, so he would have to swim. The current was strong and the river was deep, and he knew he couldn't get his jacket wet. If that got wet, he'd be dead. So once again, he took it off, as well as his thermal long sleeve top, and used his large stick to lower himself further into the agonizingly frigid water. The ice in the water going past him felt like razor blades. But he could finally see his exit point on the other side. So he held his jacket and shirt above his head with one hand, and very awkwardly swam one-handed. He ended up to his neck in the water.
That's so crazy. I like, when I get into like a cold plunge, I like can't breathe.
Yeah.
And that's typically like 50, maybe 40 degrees something.
Right.
I mean, this has got to be 32.
This is as cold as you can get.
If not colder, because it's moving. I cannot imagine being up to my neck like that. Breathing becomes so difficult. Like, it becomes majority of your conscious mind.
And that had to have been, like, kind of, I mean, I don't want to say the easiest part, but, like, keep in mind he has a shattered pelvis and broken femur.
Honestly, would it not help the pain because everything else is numb?
Maybe. Maybe in some weird way.
I'm like, maybe it is. Maybe there is an upside here.
Maybe.
Well, it's got to help the first time if his foot was so swollen.
Yeah, let's look at the bright side. He's icing his whole body.
Right.
This is helping. This is the swelling.
Well, it's, you know, it's trade-offs.
Put some ice on it. Just as Ken was making it to the other side, he became aware of his boot becoming loose. And before he could react, his boot came off of his foot in the water. So he stumbled a bit, but he caught himself before he fully went under, thankfully, and he was able to pull himself out of the river. But his boot, on his good foot, was swept away, leaving his foot exposed. And he literally watched it get swept away down the river. Thankfully, his jacket and shirt didn't get wet, but he had still a 3-mile crawl through the snow ahead of him and no boot. Ken knew at this point he would get frostbite and lose his foot. There was no way he wouldn't. But again, he had no other choice but to keep going. So he put on his shirt and his jacket, and he kept going. And soon his sock did freeze solid. That's just how it went. He had gotten to a point where he didn't care about anything anymore. Not about himself or his family. He was just in a trance. His body was in pure survival mode, and it was going to do what it had to get through. He was a machine. He finally reached the road where the taxi had left him 4 days earlier, but he was still 3 miles to the nearest village, and Ken's body was running on fumes. He knew he was running out of time. He was still in excruciating pain, but he was also so numbed by the cold that he figured he might as well try to stand and walk. He was okay for only a few seconds, and then he felt his bones grating once again and heard another crunch. And he fell to the ground once again. And even though he felt so much pain in that moment, he thought to himself, if he could find another big stick to take some of his weight, he could use it as a crutch and maybe he could walk. And he actually managed to find a large stick that was good enough for him to lean on, and he used it to take a few steps, which was such a relief, but that was short-lived because all of a sudden, it felt like Ken had been stabbed in the stomach with a knife. That was the first time he had felt that pain throughout those 4 days. The stress of those 4 days was causing his body to produce stomach acid at lethal levels, and it was perforating the lining of his gut. The acid flowing into his abdominal cavity was literally eating him from the inside, which could kill him within hours.
So he was having ulcers?
Yes, he was having ulcers, and this sort of pain is apparently, like, excruciating.
Yeah, dude.
Really, really painful. But then Ken
it's like, we forget that there's just a sack of acid.
Yeah.
In all of us.
Mm-hmm. We all just are carrying around a sack of acid.
We really are.
We're just acid sacks, all of us.
Tell me we're not.
We are. I'm agreeing.
And just sometimes there's too much of it.
Yeah.
Like this, can it get worse? Like, seriously.
I guess you're just going to have to wait and find out.
I'm asking for a friend. Like, it seemed pretty bad 3 beats ago when I was like, oh, it can always get worse. Why?
Right.
Oh my
God. My question to you is why?
Why?
Uh-huh.
Hasn't he been through enough?
I think so. I would love for this to stop.
Yeah, a random dog sled. Be like, hey.
That'd be nice. That'd be really nice. Ken knew he had to make it to the village that night because there was no way he could make it out there alone for another night. He told himself while he was on that road, he would not stop walking. But then he realized there was a problem because he came to a fork in the road and only one would lead to the village. So he had a 50-50 shot. He decided to take the road that looked a little less traveled because for some reason his acid-riddled gut was telling him to go that way. He really felt like there was a house up that road. And when he reached a clearing, he saw the outline of a building. He thought that was it. He had made it. He was literally steps away from safety. But when he got to the building, he saw, to his horror, the building was only an empty barn. It was crushing. He felt like that decision could have just cost him his life. But he still didn't feel like he was ready to die. Now he was angry. He wasn't going to let that mountain kill him after all he had been through. So he had to retrace his steps back to the fork in the road. And as he finally got there, the sun was setting. But finally, he took his only other option. As he walked along the road, it was pitch black. But eventually, he saw light coming through the trees. This time, it was a house with its lights on. He felt so proud of himself. He knew he'd gotten himself out of there. He fought for his life, and he won. And he finally knocked on this person's door, and when they answered, they were very shocked to find Ken extremely near death on their doorstep. But he was safe. Ken was immediately rushed to the hospital where he underwent multiple surgeries for his shattered pelvis and broken femur, and doctors had to remove most of his stomach because the ordeal had left him with life-threatening ulcers, and they had to remove four of his toes. Though doctors gave him little chance of survival and even less chance to walk again, he beat the odds. 2.5 years after the accident, he was finally able to walk again. Ken's willpower and determination got him to not only walk again, but also to become a serious endurance cyclist and climber. The Fan Dance Race Series was inspired by Ken's recovery and return to health. Originally known as the Exercise High Walk, today it goes by its unofficial name, the Fan Dance. He also had the goal of competing in the Tour de France, which I'm sure he did, because, I mean, the man can literally do anything. And he also met with Tim Leatherman, who is, I guess, the person who made the Leatherman multi-tool, which is what he used throughout his entire time out there.
Wait, he's like a brand ambassador?
I guess. Yeah. He like shook his hand and gave him a shiny new Leatherman because he left it on the mountain. Like he lost it up there. And he said, actually, I've got a stack of them at home. I've always got a Raptor and a Wave in my pocket. So he's like his spokesperson for the Leatherman at this point.
They should be paying him. I mean, what a more compelling story.
So funny.
I almost died.
And here's,
not for the Leatherman.
Here's my Leatherman. Yeah, he also wrote a book called Darkness Descending. And that is the story of Ken Jones and his unbelievable survival through multiple avalanches and rivers and wolves and bears. Oh my. Oh my God. This man is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard to fathom the amount of pain for the duration of time that he had to endure it. If he had known the extent of the journey, literally at any point, I don't know, like, it's just hard to think that anyone would be like, yep, we gotta do it and not just give up, because it's like two rivers. I mean, his whole pelvis is shattered.
Yeah.
And he's just crawling 8 miles down a mountain.
Internally bleeding.
Yeah.
And then his stomach just is eating itself.
Well, here's the flip side of it, is that how long in total? Was it 5 days or four?
4 days, but like 4 full days, like into the night of the fourth day.
Right. But at the same time, it's all temporary if you get through it.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
If you can look at it that way, it is only 4 days.
It is only 4 days. If you want to look at it like that.
The worst 4 days you will ever have on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean,
cup half full kind of way.
I mean, you kind of have to get through it. I mean, and yeah, it's like the mini goal setting. And I really don't know how he went through the rivers twice and then didn't get hypothermia.
I know, because
like he must have used his training somehow.
Oh my God, he used every inch of his training, absolutely, I feel like. But also, the rivers were particularly interesting to me because he did like take off his jacket and that was the most important thing. But his lower half still had his clothes on. So like his pants and shoes and socks and everything got completely soaked. So I guess the only important thing, or I guess the most important thing, was his jacket not getting wet.
Yeah, but
like
core.
His pants did still get wet. And that didn't kill him.
Yeah, I'm like shocked.
I know that I wouldn't expect that. But yeah, he went through two rivers. So
yeah. And then the fact that he only lost four toes is his sock shocking. Froze.
Solid. Froze solid. And when he fell asleep in the snow, he was just lucky enough. Like, I'm sure when he was crawling through that snowstorm, he was like, I actually can't believe this is happening. Like, this couldn't possibly get worse.
And then
he fell asleep and the snow cocooned him and kept him alive. The storm kept him alive. It like insulated him. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, like a little blanket.
Like a little blanket. It tucked him in. So in a way, because he kept saying like, it felt like the mountain was killing me. It felt like the mountain was conspiring against me. And like, yeah, it kind of felt like that too. But in a way, it also kept you alive. It blanketed you and like cocooned you and said, you know what? We'll give you one more try. You know what?
One more try.
We'll give you another try.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, just an incredible guy. I mean, holy shit. Like, yeah. I don't even know what the hell to say about him other than he did great. He did a great job.
Yeah, did great.
Gold star for Ken Jones.
It's inspiring.
Yeah.
What he persevered through. The other part of it that I was thinking of is once you finally get down to a house, what do you say to these people? Just like,
my God.
Do they even speak English? Like, does
Probably
he speak
not.
Romanian or I don't know. And he's British, so he's just like, I don't know. Like,
well,
I don't know,
I'm
like,
sure
what's
that's
going on?
Not what Ken sounds like. But
probably not. But like, what do you say?
I'm
you're
sure
like,
at that
hey.
Point, you don't even have to say anything. They can just tell you're in distress and they need to call an ambulance. Like,
yeah, he's like, hospital, please.
Yeah. Or maybe
I
he
want
knew,
drugs now.
I'm sure if he's in traveling to other countries, he probably knows like enough of the language to get across what he needs.
Probably.
You know? But at that point, again, you probably didn't need to say any words to get across that these people needed to call an ambulance. They lived out in the middle of nowhere in a mountain in Romania, and they have someone on their doorstep who's obviously been through hell and is on a stick branch as a crutch, and he's got blood covering his body. Like, call an ambulance. And they did. And then he had life-saving surgery. And 2.5 years later, he walked.
That is a long recovery.
But then, he did it.
And then he got, did you say he got invited to the Tour de France?
No, that was a goal that he set for himself.
Oh, okay.
That's what he wanted to do. But he's like a cyclist. Like, that's what he does.
Damn.
Yeah. And I mean, the determination on that man is like, it should be studied. Like, he's incredible.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I really wonder where like something like that comes from. It has to be a combination of you're born with it. And then, I mean, he was in the military. So
yeah,
clearly circumstances like formed him, but
yeah, training totally. But that's Ken's story. I hope you enjoyed it. We certainly enjoyed talking about it, and I think that's all we really have to say about that for now. So why don't we have a bit of a palate cleanser and you can tell me your good thing. What's your good thing?
My good thing is that number one, it is our anniversary.
Yeah,
we have 8 years under our belt, a full PhD.
We sure do.
And we went glass blowing, so it was really cool. We made a mushroom.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Yeah, nothing I had ever done before. It's super involved and very hot.
Yes.
But it was super cool to actually see how it's done and get to do it yourself. So yeah, that's my good thing. What is yours?
My good thing is that my YouTube video is out. Shocker. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, so much work went into it. Like, it's hard to explain the gap between what you would expect and what it is.
Yeah, there was just a lot of bumps in the road. So
yeah.
I won't get into the weeds of it, but to make a very long story short, I had to go through multiple cameras and multiple rounds of editing and multiple, just a lot of headache to get this video out. And yeah, a lot of trial and error. So there was definitely a learning curve that happened, and I'm sure there's a lot of more learning to happen. But ultimately, the good thing is that it's here and that my journey has now officially begun, because I've been wanting to do it for a really long time and I'm doing it. So I think that's a really big accomplishment and a big goal. And yeah, I'm just excited to see where this journey leads. And yeah, I'm happy to be doing it finally.
Yeah, amen.
So that's my good thing. But anyway, if you'd like to see my first YouTube video, my channel name is Steph Today, and my first video title is Her Lover in the Attic Shot Her Husband, Dolly Osterreich and Otto Sanhuber. It's a mouthful, but that's what it's called. If you'd like to get access to all of our bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to send it to us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to nottodaypodcast@gmail.com. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but a T on the podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.